Welcome to As for Football's Army Football Show with your host and As for Football First Captain Rob Wright, an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army football team throughout their season as they seek to claim the Commander-in-Chief Trophy.
And welcome back to the As for Football Army Football Show with your host and First Captain Rob Wright out of Germany. I'm joined today by my two co-hosts, Jordan out of Atlanta, Georgia, and Dan out of Coastal Connecticut. We're brought to you by Emblem Athletic. Be the gear hero for your unit, your team, or your business. Make sure to check out emblemathletic.com for all your gear or equipment needs. They will take you from start to finish with a custom design and a store where everyone can buy, and everything's made custom and to order. So make sure to check them out, Emblem Athletic. Guys, how are we feeling? Let's start with Jordan, who's recovering from a 96-hour bender, as I hear it.
My body hurts, Rob. I was just going on pure adrenaline in Nashville, and as soon as I sat on the plane yesterday, I just crashed. So right around that time, Dan was texting us about the secret project we got going on, and I just had to turn my phone off and go to bed at 6 p.m. So
no, good for you.
My body hurts, but my mind is somewhat here. My liver's not here, but Army football is what we're talking about. And, I'm happy with our performance. Wish we would have won the game. But overall, I'm really happy with the way the year ended.
Great. Yeah, Dan, how are you feeling? Probably not the same as Jordan.
Well, not that different. I mean, my family and I went up and skied before Christmas, and then just my wife and I went back and skied again, got back just in time to catch the game. I didn't go on a 96-hour bender, but that game did put me on a slight bender. Wound up swimming a couple of times to get it back off. So, I'm doing all right. You?
Hey, I'm feeling great. I'm just at peace with the world. I had to go back to work today, non-telework work. So it was a tough one to get back to the office and get back to the old grind. I haven't worked in 3 weeks. So, that was interesting. A lot of snow here in Germany, doing a lot of sledding with the family. So it's been fun. And with that, Dan, let's talk about what's most important. Honestly, I almost forgot that we played just a couple days ago. It feels like a lifetime ago for me personally. I don't know why. But let's talk about the Liberty Bowl and talk about what happened in the game and go over some of the things that the Firsty Club and we internally have been discussing, because I know people want some answers and some people are really satisfied with the season. Some people aren't. So let's talk about it.
Well, yeah, Rob, as you said, it was a complete emotional roller coaster. Army headed into the Liberty Bowl against West Virginia, down something like 11 starters, including linebacker John Radigan, two offensive linemen, fullback Jacoby Buchanan, slot back Tyrell Robinson, and more. The Black Knights came into the game as solid 7 or so point underdogs. They started at something like 9 points, just over a touchdown by the time kickoff happened. Missing all those starters, I think we were all wondering just how ugly this game might get against a very solid West Virginia team. But the Black Knights came out on fire. They held the Mountaineers to just 18 yards rushing and forced two turnovers, both off quarterback Jarrett Doje in the first half. However, Army's offense struggled early, mounting exactly one long scoring drive. But with the interceptions and the sack fumble right at the end of the first half, Army actually headed into halftime up 14-10, despite gaining just 83 yards on offense and 2.4 yards per carry. After the half, though, Army mounted another long drive, going up 21-10, and seemed to take control. It was at this point that you started to see time of possession look about like you wanted it to. However, West Virginia switched quarterbacks, and quarterback Kendall Austin's mobility and just sheer moxie helped them quite a bit. Mountaineers scored, recovered an onside kick, and though they didn't immediately score again, they definitely did break Army's momentum. And in the end, West Virginia scored 14 unanswered to come back from 11 down. Army got close enough to tie it on a field goal, but, for whatever reason, it just wasn't meant to be. I'll sum this up a little bit more and say that the Black Knights finished with just 182 yards rushing, 3.1 yards per carry. I don't know if that's good or bad. Quarterback Christian Anderson, though, had a pretty good game. He went 4 of 6 passing for 57 yards. He had one interception on a last chance fourth down play that I do not think was his fault. Tyre Tyler led all rushers with 24 carries for 76 yards and 3 touchdowns. Slot back A.J. Howard had 3 carries for 18 yards. Anderson had 4 carries for 18 yards, which was outstanding. Tight end Chris Cameron had 1 electric catch for 32 yards. And finally, yearling wide receiver Cole Catterbone had 2 catches for 19 yards. Army's defense.
Oh, Yearbone.
Army's defense finished with 3 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, 2 interceptions, and 2 quarterback hurries. All in all, it was hardly a bad performance, especially missing so many starters. However, the Black Knights came up short in a game that they very, very much could have won. And, you know, as we should note, maybe Big 12 finished bowl season 5-0, so it looks like the conference as a whole might have been a little better than we thought.
Yeah, that's a great summary, Dan. Jordan, let's talk and give everybody a minute to kind of give the overall quick summary feel of how you feel about the game and the outcome before we get into the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, people are upset, and I understand that because this was a game that we very much could have won and should have won. But at the end of the day, I remember how I felt after we won against Citadel and how I feel now that we've lost. And yeah, it stinks that we lost. But I don't feel bad. I'm not angry. I'm not pissed off. We lost, but we played well. And, you know, we found out. I was in the Uber to the, it was actually a brewery where we watched the game. I was with the guy who runs the Army Barstool account in Nashville. And that's when I got the text that all these people were out for, you know, the game and COVID. And I thought, oh my gosh, we are going to lose by 21 points. And it's going to be bad. And then at halftime, I was like, wow, we're playing very well. And obviously, we could have done some things differently. But at the end of the day, we went out and had to make these adjustments last minute, playing against a Power 5 team. And we played well. We executed well. Were there some questionable decisions from the coaching staff? Sure. You know, we can justify it. We can understand why they maybe made those decisions. But at the end of the day, I am very happy with the way our guys played at the end of this horrible long season. And just everything that has gone on for them to come out and execute at that level and still play their hearts out after Air Force, Navy, back-to-back weekends, CIC, all that, to still come out and be motivated for this game and take it down to the wire. I mean, that's all I want. As an Army fan, my, you know, benchmark for success is beating Navy. A great season is beating Air Force and winning the CIC. Everything above that is extra. And we got to go to an incredible bowl game. We got a $2-point-something million payout. Great national exposure. It's not a moral victory. It's not exactly what we wanted, but it's far more than what we expected or what we asked for at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, you know, I'll give my take next. I was satisfied. Same as you, Jordan. I did think once I learned about all of the starters that were out, the money line bet did not look so hot anymore. And fortunately the spread, which I was doubled down on, did cover, so that was pretty nice. I got them at 9.5 points, which was an easy win. But to look at this team, to be able to come out and play at the level they did, one, these guys, I'll just put this out there. These guys, as much as they'll tell you they wanted to be there, I know there's a lot of them that did not want to be at this game. They hadn't left the academy other than a, you know, trip out and back just to play a football game. They haven't left in almost 7 months, and everyone else had been home for an extra 2 weeks. They had already done everything that they wanted to. It's nice when you're there, but they even got a little taste of being home. And then they got to come back, and of course, a bunch of people caught COVID during that period. So for them to come out and play like that, being down so many starters, I mean, John Rattigan's just hard to replace, really, really hard to replace. So for us to be that competitive and for West Virginia to have to get an onside kick, us to miss a field goal to tie it up at the end, for all of those things that went the way that they did, for them, for us to lose, like, it's very impressive to me. And overall, we did everything that I wanted us to do this season, and I was just satisfied to kind of get out of there with a respectable game and knowing that they gave all. Dan, what do you think?
At this point now, you know, almost a week later, I'm really happy with the team, and I'm happy especially with the young talent that we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. In the moment, man, I was honestly devastated. Going into halftime, I thought for sure Army was going to win. And then after they put that long drive together in the third quarter, I was like, yeah, we're going to kick these guys' asses, and you know what? This is going to be like a legendary victory. So I personally found that the loss a little hard to stomach in the immediate sense. And I think my recap article reflected that. But it was a great season, and you can't take anything away from that. And I certainly don't want to. And the fact that they played so well without so many starters is really amazing. There are some really, really good young players on this team, and I'm excited about next year. And I guess that's just where I am.
And Dan, that last point you just made about young players, I think is so crucial, because last season we weren't able to rebuild. It was a rebuilding year. We've seen what happened Navy this year. They've lost some key players. I think that's one thing that we really need to highlight is the amount of turnover that we've had this season, and we still managed to win 9 football games. We started, what, 5 quarterbacks? You know, whatever it is, you know, we had Plebe starting on the offensive line, and we still won 9 football games. So as happy as I am about, you know, this season, as sad I am that we lost this bowl, I mean, looking forward, it's like, this is what you wanted. You got a ton of guys to go in and get experience in a big-time game, and to me, that's going to pay dividends in the offseason and next year as well.
Yeah, listen, they played 2 plebes starters on the offensive line in this game against 2 All-American defensive tackles, and they still ran the ball up the middle reasonably successfully. And that is not nothing, folks.
Where else are you going to get that experience? You're not going to get that in any other game, in any practice. That's years of experience that they got in 60 minutes of football, and that's invaluable.
Yeah, no, it definitely, you definitely have to step back and take a deep breath and go, you know, yeah, that sucks, but oh my God, this is a thing. And, but I really felt it like I was there, like I was in the moment. And man, you know, that stuff, when that stuff happens to me as an athlete, it just drives me crazy. So yeah, that's just, I was in that headspace for a full day.
Yeah. You know, I was texting with you, Dan, after, and he sent us the draft of his preview, and I just said, I think you fall a little on the other side of the fence of frustration, and I was definitely on the side of, I was satisfied. I know that's not the way to be, but I know what it took to get there, and well, we got a lot to look forward to, and I thought the staff did a great job, and I was impressed with Cody Worley and what he did as a play caller. So overall, I was happy.
It's good to be satisfied as a fan, but it, you know, it's rat poison to be satisfied as an athlete. And, you know, I mean, it is. And so, yeah, I mean, that's, I looked at it the wrong way. I'm not out there playing. It's just a little easier to forget that sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, I know some people have been saying, oh, I'm sick and tired that we can't beat a Power 5 or a big time Power 5. Which isn't true, because we beat Duke a couple of years ago. And, oh, well, you know, I'm sick and tired of these moral victories and whatever. But, like, it's not a moral victory. A moral victory would be like, oh, we went out, we lost by 40 points, but we got to go to a bowl game, so woohoo, like, go Army, we didn't get shut out. Like, no, like, we played a great football game, and just a couple little things didn't go our way. And at the end of the day, football is a game of inches, and we didn't have enough inches to win. And, you know, for better or worse, that's what happened. And, you know, as a fan, we just need to look back and say, okay, you know, where are we at? And I'm comfortable with the direction and the trajectory of our program. Obviously, we've talked about this. We think some things need to be fixed. But at the end of the day, we are in such a better place this time, you know, in 2021 than we were last year in 2020, coming off from a beatdown against Navy, wondering what the heck just happened.
Yeah, exactly. we've had a lot of success this year to build upon, and it doesn't look like in any way that we're going to regress. And you know, the thing that I love the most is the analogies and the lessons that Munkin teaches these guys. And for me, for this team to go out and play so hard and keep it so competitive in a game where I really don't think people realize the talent differential that we have. And not to mention that all of our best talent was out. For them to keep it that close is just one of those tenacity and grit that you need to have as a future, you know, leader, especially a leader in combat. And it just, it really, really makes me feel good. Because honestly, I'd rather see these guys face a lot of adversity and come out and almost win than just cruise to an easy victory. And this team showed me that they had that moxie, and I'm proud to be a fan of that team.
Absolutely.
So with that, let's get to the specifics of it. That went a little longer than I wanted it to, but let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Dan, go ahead and tell us about the good from the game.
Yeah, well, Army's linebackers were outstanding, and considering you're missing a second-team All-American and John Rattigan, that's not, you know, that's really saying something. Linebacker Eric Smith led all tackles.
Legit.
Legit All-American.
You know? Still all-independent team, like legit All-American.
Yeah, like getting looks from scouts in the NFL, which is amazing. So Eric Smith, as I said, led all tacklers with 7 tackles, 5 solo. That dude is a machine. He has so much talent. And then you had plebe linebacker Spencer Jones. None of us had ever heard of him. Correct me if I'm wrong. Starting in place of Rattigan. That dude was amazing. Finished with 6 tackles, 1 tackle for loss. It's like, holy crap. Where did they get this guy? Cornerback Javari Bordeaux had a beautiful interception. Played one of the best games he's ever played as a Black Knight, which is awesome in what I believe was his final game of his career.
Correct. And he missed the first half of the season. So it was good to see him play his best game.
Absolutely. Had the sack fumble on Doje that set up Army's go-ahead score at the end of the first half. Zach Harding's monstrous 59-yard punt to flip the field after Army got buried in its own end in the third quarter. How did a punter become arguably the best player on the team? Seriously. I mean, you know, I get he's not maybe the most important player on the team, but doing what he does, he is a legitimate weapon as a punter. It's amazing. And then finally, quarterback Christian Anderson. I kind of feel for Anderson because he didn't play a lot and he moved the ball every time he got the opportunity, but he was really, really good in this game.
Jordan, how about the bad?
We've been saying it all year. Going to say it one more time. The refs' obvious holding calls were missed all night long. There's a fine line between good blocking and holding, and West Virginia was doing both. There were guys who were out there on their assignments doing the right thing, and there were guys who were holding every single play, and the refs didn't call it. And I know Ross Tucker will say, oh, it's not holding if it doesn't get called. Like, when you're totally twisted around the guy, dragging him from behind to the ground, that is holding. They also missed the blatant intentional grounding call that allowed West Virginia to score. He was like 3 feet back in the pocket, threw it short of the line of scrimmage, and they said, oh, it's totally fine, even though there's no one 20 yards around him. So a little upset about that. Also, Army's inside run game didn't really do what it needed to do. And like Dan said, we're running into 2 All-American, you know, defensive tackles. We understand that, like, you need to threaten the fullback dive to open up the rest of the offense, but running right at those guys was questionable because every time we ran outside, we were able to move the ball. But as soon as we ran that midline option to the A gap or the B gap, we got nowhere. But as soon as we went to the C gap or, you know, further outside, we started seeing success. Also, not going for it on 4th-and-3, missed the field goal. So, I mean, obviously, if they had made the field goal on 4th-and-3, we would have tied the game, gone to overtime. This wouldn't be in the bad category, probably be in the good category. I don't know.
Well, Coach Munkin said he went against the analytics. He was hard on himself in the post-game press about it. So that's kind of how I got stuck in the bad category.
Yeah.
I don't think we would have gotten the 4th-and-3, but I also don't think we were going to beat them in overtime.
Yeah, so. Right. I felt like the exact same thing. That was exactly what I thought, too. When they decided to kick, I kind of thought that was the right thing to do. But Munkin was harping on it at some length in the press conference.
Yeah. And I remember, I was at the 2017 Armed Forces Bowl when we went for 2 after, with 30 seconds left or whatever. They asked Munkin, he's like, we went to overtime that we knew they were going to score because we can't stop their run. So why am I going to give them that opportunity? So I was a little surprised when the field goal unit came on, knowing that about Coach Monken. But at the same time, your kicker's been good all season. The kick was, you know, it was close, and I think it was the right call. It was probably the call that I would have made as a coach. But it's also an impossible call because you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. So
I think it's just one of the first times that he's went against the analytics and been wrong, and that personally eats at him.
Yeah. Well, you could tell because it was things that a lot of people, I think, questioned after the game, play calling wise. He seemed pretty strongly in favor of the way that they had gone. However, this particular call, which I didn't think was particularly questionable, except that it didn't work and he was all over himself. So, you know, obviously those guys see a slightly different game than we do, but that's just kind of what happened.
Well, you know, to talk about the play calling, I was happy after basically the first two series that we started to get some outside runs. And honestly, I didn't really even know until midway through the game that Worley was calling the plays. And then I was like, oh, okay, that's why. It seems like Brent abandoned the inside run a little earlier than I thought he would. I was saying to myself, we will get absolutely crushed if we don't start doing something different. And I know Lee Gibson will you know, get after me a little bit, but when you're going against the defensive line like that, you have to run outside to open up the inside because it's just not going to work in the A gap, especially with the inexperienced offensive linemen. Those guys were getting 5 yards upfield immediately on the snap. So the hard counts and other things we had to do. So I felt like, though, throughout the game, we just gave away plays because they're like, okay, we're going to do a non-triple option fullback dive in the A gap. Let's see if it works. And it never did. There's a few times where after we had repetitively run sweeps and outs and bootlegs that we got loose in the B and C gaps. And it was very successful, even 8 to 10 yard runs a few times, but almost every time it was a no yard gain, even with hard nosed Sandon McCoy punching around. And I really thought that hurt our offense because I didn't see too many times, maybe one or two, that we lost any yards going outside. It was very rare.
Yeah, and Rob, I tweeted in the second quarter, West Virginia has 11 in the box and 5 yards off the line. We need a quick pass or sweep play to keep them honest. I think that was right when, you know, shortly before Cody made that decision. But I completely agree with you. Like, I get fullback dive, midline option is our bread and butter, but you know, and we have had some negative yardage plays going to the outside, but that's not what was happening. That's not the look we were getting. And, you know, we adjusted, and I think they did a good job of adjusting when they did. Hindsight's 20/20. They probably could have done it a little bit sooner, but I understand the game plan that they were trying to set up.
Yeah, it just seemed like it didn't deviate that much from Army or from the Air Force and Navy game. And I knew if we did that, we were going to lose. So it's tough when you're down all the players. And I got to be honest, this offense, we return a lot from it, but it's not like the offense was a liability all year. So it's going to be interesting to see if we can do anything different. And I'll go with the one ugly thing we want to talk about was probably on the forefront of everyone's mind, the QB switch during the second to final drive before we ended up doing a 3-and-out and getting the ball back and then trying to spin it around a little bit. We brought in Tyler after Christian Anderson had demonstrated that he was having success. And it ended up as a huge error. Of course, as we'll say here, hindsight is 20/20. but, you know, we look at that and it just killed the momentum because West Virginia knew what we were going to do. We knew what we were going to do. The fans knew what we were going to do. We're going to run QB power. And that had been hit or miss all night, and since they knew it, they totally oversold into it, and they were able to stop it two times in a row, and then that kind of got us into the situation. I've never been a fan of play calling to try to say run out the clock. Like, we don't want to give them the ball back with too much. Like, if you can score, you run it in the damn end zone, period. You don't
take the points.
Get cute with it.
Well, especially exactly. In a situation so, like this, you know, yeah, where they've been stopping you steady for a quarter and a half. Yeah, well, like I said, I don't want to get too much into this, but when they brought in Tyler with 4 minutes remaining, first off, they loosened it up a little bit with, like, what, 4.5, 4:45, something like that. You know, we had the 32-yard throw to Chris Cameron, and then, you know, they start moving the ball. So then they get into, you know, scoring position, if not into the red zone, then, you know, at least to the 30. And then they bring in Tyler, and obviously I thought they were trying to slow things down. Like, it's like, okay, we've got 4 minutes. We got to go 30 yards. All we got to do is just get down the field, score that last touchdown, and walk off. Very clearly, I thought they did not want to give the ball back with too much time. But it's just, like, it just didn't work. And it hadn't worked. Army had been going three and out steady. And I guess at that point, you know, you're in four down territory. But I don't know. Like I said, it's just, if it had worked, I guess we'd be calling them heroes. But it didn't work. And so here we are.
Yeah, I mean, of course, nothing's going to be questioned if it works. But at the same time, it's like if Christian Anderson didn't work, well, we were going to sit here and say, we should have brought Tyler in. I think nobody's going to say that. So I don't know. I feel like you're subjecting yourself to more risk there. But I do get the point of it's four down territory. We're tougher than you. We're just going to run it in. But the reality is we scored from like the 13-yard line on a fumble that the defensive caused before half. And after the half, we had one long sustained drive, and that was it. No other success was to be had found on the field. With that, let's go back to Fact or Fiction Revisited that Jordan and Dan had from the pre-show with Sal. Jordan, you had the first one.
Do I have to say this? I was wrong on both of these. So, whatever. It's fine. I said Army would have 300 yards rushing. That didn't happen. Boo me.
Dan, funny you also for you? Yeah. Had this.
Yeah. I thought, well, I said fact because they would need 300 yards rushing to win, which wasn't even remotely true. But yeah, and then my own fact or fiction was similar. I said Army dominates time of possession with at least 35 minutes. That was fiction. Army came up with not quite 34 minutes. If they had converted one more, you know, fourth down, then they would have had it. But, you know, what can you do? That was, and it, as it happens, that really was the telling statistic.
Yeah, that was. And, you know, our defense being so good has thrown off some of the fact or fictions this year about how many yards a team needs to win. Because apparently you can just punt it nine times a game and play with Army's defense to win games. So, you know, we went almost eight full quarters with no team scoring on us from Navy to Air Force till Air Force got it a couple points there in the fourth quarter. So, with that, let's not harp on that too much. Let's go to year in review and looking ahead to whatever they're going to call their recruiting this year, you know, Night Vision 2021. Let's talk about that. Dan, you lead it off.
Well, Army finished 2020 9-3. We beat Navy. We won the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy. And like I said, the future looks super bright with a bunch of young players on both offense and defense. On offense, almost everybody is returning. It's actually way easier to list the guys who are graduating. By far the biggest losses will be along the offensive line, where we're losing four starters, ostensible starters. Left guard Mike Johnson, he's been a captain. He's been awesome, and he was awesome in the bowl game too. It's worth adding. Left tackle Luke McCleary, right guard Peyton Reeder, and right tackle J.B. Hunter, along with fullback Santa McCoy and wide receiver Cam Harrison. I may very well be missing somebody, but that was kind of who jumped out at me off the starters roster. Good news, though, especially along the offensive line, is that Army's played a lot of guys along the O-line this year, including left tackle Jordan Law and left guard Connor Fanukane. I hope I said that. Those guys are both plebes. Center Connor Bishop is a yearling. Right guard Mason Kolinchak and right tackle Cameron Holloway are both Cals. And, of course, tight end Chris Cameron, we've been talking about all day, is a Cal. Wouldn't be surprised to see him be a captain. He's been one of the best players on the team for a while now.
And don't forget, we have juniors that will be seniors this year, Noah Knapp and Dean Powell, also have played guard and center this year. So while we lose four starters, we bring over five offensive linemen with starting experience. I don't know what the combined starts of the unit is, but I actually feel pretty good about the unit as a whole coming back.
Yeah, I agree completely. Add into that, almost all the skill position players are returning. I really, with the exception of Sandon McCoy, you know, guys that have seen a lot of time this year are mostly coming back. In fact, as you've pointed out privately a couple of times, the depth in the quarterback room is almost a problem. You've got Tyre Tyler, Christian Anderson, Cade Ballard, Jamel Jones, and hey, Jabari Hawes might come back next year. So that is a lot of dudes, and only one of them is going to be the starter. Oh, Cade Ballard. I said him, didn't I?
No, Bellin. Yeah, he was ahead of Ballard and Tyler early in the season when they went to their third or fourth person, and then he kind of got hurt and then kind of lost his spot a little bit. But he's right there too as well.
Similarly, losses on defense, but also a lot of returning playmakers. So again, it's a little easier just to note the key losses. Losing Amadeo West, that's a big loss. Linebacker John Rattigan, we talked about. Nose tackle Nick Stokes and cornerback Javari Bordeaux, sorry about that. But we're returning Eric Smith. He's a Cal. Wouldn't be surprised to see him be a captain next year. The entire secondary, save Bordeaux. Nose tackle Nolan Cockrell played outstanding
number
this year.
Number one player. He's the most important player, I think, on the team.
Interesting. And also, I know another of your favorites is defensive lineman Kwabena Bonsu. I would have called him the most important player on the defense. Those guys are both cows. And plus a bunch of guys who haven't really played that much, but every time they've played, they've been really good, even in high leverage spots. Yearling linebacker Andre Carter II, who was the hero against Georgia Southern. Linebacker safety for Fabrice Boyne, who has played a lot on special teams. He was a three-star recruit. Could very easily have a John Rattigan-type season next year. And linebacker Spencer Jones, we already saw him play. He's a plebe. So, yeah, a lot of dudes coming back, like legit.
Yeah. And while we do lose Bordeaux, we bring back McDuffie, Cunningham, Broughton, and Jabari Moore. So really, we return the entire secondary that started the majority of the year. We bring back one of our two Mike linebackers, and then we also bring back the two key pieces, Bonsu and Cockrell, which if you watch those guys, and I'm not a defensive guy, but Cockrell stands up whoever's blocking him every time and then shucks them to the side and meets a guy in the hole. And I'm telling you, he has had what is not notable because he's a nose tackle. You've seen his name called more than most nose tackles ever, and that's a testament to how good he is and how strong he is. But when you have a guy like that that can plug up everything, it makes everything else on the defense tick. So having him and Bonsu back is going to be absolutely huge. And we get Morrison back on one of our Apache linebackers. So I'm feeling great about the defense.
Yeah, they have a lot of dudes coming back. Like, I'm sure there's dudes we haven't even heard of next year, too. It's crazy. The amount of yearlings that came up and played just unbelievable. You know, we've been putting together the special project, and Jabari Moore has made more plays for this team and we'd never even heard of that dude until this year.
We had never heard of John Rattigan until this year. And all of a sudden, first game, he gets a pick six. And it's like, who the hell is this kid? Like, is he a grad transfer or something? Like, what happened? So, like, if that can happen, I mean, you know, I can only imagine, you know, what's going to happen next year. Not to diminish, you know, Johnny Nation's accomplishments. He's been an incredible player, but I hope we can duplicate his success in the years to come.
Well, listen, Johnny Nation, last year in the bowl practices, Sal wrote about him. And I talked to some guys about him, and Munkin talked about him, and he was in the interviews, and we didn't end up really seeing him in the bowl game. He made something like four picks against the first team offense, like in bowl week practices. You know, I should have highlighted it in the preseason, but I did talk about him at the end of last year. It's just none of us thought he was going to be the kind of player he was. And it's crazy. So hopefully We see, you know, hopefully number 45 was able to absorb something, Spencer Jones. He definitely wasn't as good as Rattigan, but he's also about 3 or 4 years younger than him, but from a maturity standpoint and just from an experience standpoint. So excited for things to come. Dan, do you want to talk about the 2021 schedule?
Yes, I definitely do. So there are 12 games next season. We have two Power 5 teams, one from the Big Ten, one from the ACC, one Sun Belt team, one Conference USA team, two very good MAC teams, and three independents, plus one Patriot League team and the Commander Chiefs game. So week one, we are at Georgia State. Week two, we bring in the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. Week three, we welcome the greatest football team in Connecticut, the Huskies. Week four, we bring in the Miami, Ohio Redhawks. Then we're at Ball State, at Wisconsin, bring in Wake Forest Saturday, October 23rd. We play Air Force at Arlington, Texas, November 6th. Then we've got the Bucknell Bison, UMass Minutemen, at Liberty on November 27th, and then against Army Navy in East Rutherford, New Jersey, Giant Stadium on December 11th.
Yeah, that stretch in October is going to be especially tough. Ball State has always given us a problem. So you start the first Saturday in October, October 2nd, at Ball State. The next week you have to travel to play at Wisconsin. You know you're banged up at this point, and then you bring in the next weekend. Fortunately, there is a bye in between Ball State and Wisconsin, but then the next weekend you bring in Wake Forest home. So that's going to be a tough stretch. Fortunately, a bye in the middle and a bye on the backside before having to travel to the neutral site against Air Force. Definitely a tougher, what should be a tougher schedule next year than we had this year. I think we ranked right around 100th in strength of schedule.
You know, the one thing that I can't get over is Air Force agreeing to play us in Texas. I get why they want to do it, because if you're Air Force and you watched all the hoopla around the Army-Navy game, and then you play for the Commander-in-Chief's trophy at West Point under virtually identical circumstances the next week, and no one cares, except, you know, people at the two service academies. Like, I get why they suddenly wanted to play this on a neutral site and try to make it a bigger game. But, yo, playing Army in Texas, that was dumb.
Air Force has some presence in Texas, but, you know, I'm sure Fort Hood will probably charter a couple coach buses to bus some people over.
Yeah, so any more thoughts on the schedule, Jordan?
Hey, I am in Atlanta, Georgia. Georgia State is in Atlanta, Georgia. It's like a mile away from my house, so I'm not going to invite a ton of people into my home, but, you know, we can party in Atlanta. It's not going to be a 96-hour bender. I don't think I can do that again, but we can definitely have a tailgate and do something fun. So
there you go. Got to get some grads there in Atlanta.
Exactly. Hey, maybe we can have an Ask for Football reunion, depending on, you know, PCSing and coronavirus.
Hopefully you're vaccinated by then, Jordan. Come on.
All right. Well, fair enough. Okay.
All right, Dan, favorite thing of the week here in the closing segment of the show?
Yeah, I guess my favorite thing of the week is just Jordan's 96-hour bender. I mean, that's a lifestyle, man. Get on a plane, drink 96 hours, and get back on the plane. That's drunk old grad territory right there. So kudos to you, Jordan. We'll see how you do when you get to be 47, but hey.
Not looking forward to it, not going to lie. I did learn some very valuable things this weekend, though, if you will indulge me.
Yeah,
First of all, if you've been drinking for quite a few hours and then you go into a hot tub and liquor spills in the hot tub, you need to clean the hot tub, otherwise it gets pretty gross. So make sure to clean your hot tubs. Just because women are in Nashville does not mean that they're not going to pull the same crap and play the same games that they would anywhere else. So don't get your heart broken, and don't try to go on a date with an Ohio State fan, because she will stand you up. And that's
the oh, I wasn't going to mention that.
You know what? I was very bitter about it, and then I'm over it. I'm a laugh about it, and, you know, I'll play the long game. We'll see what happens.
Oh, they beat the Tigers, and she was done with you.
Well, so the reason she agreed to go on a date with me is because my opening line to her was, I turned next to her in the bar and I said, "Oh, Ohio State, you guys shouldn't be playing today." And then I ignored her. So it worked. She wanted to talk to me and defend her team. I was like, "Hey, I'll make you a deal. If Notre Dame loses by more than three touchdowns, if Notre Dame loses, you have to give me your phone number. And if Ohio State wins, I'll buy you dinner." And both of those things happened. So here we are. You just got to find a girl who likes college football, but not one who's like in an on-again, off-again thing with some guy who's going to change her mind about going on a date with you because she feels guilty because some dude gave her attention. But anyway.
Oh, what are you going to do, my man? It was a worthy effort.
Hey, go back on Hinge and Tinder and just keep swiping. So it's... God. But quantity, not quality right now, my friend.
Jesus.
Well, with that, Dan's favorite thing being Jordan's 96-hour escapade, that does close our show this week. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the game and how you feel about Army season. And feel free to join the Firsty Club. We're still having some great discussions there. Also, make sure to check out emblemathletic.com. Those are ways that you can support our show, as well as following us on all our social media accounts. With that, guys, that concludes kind of the 2020 season. And I guess we're going to be looking at, go Army beat Georgia State.
Hey, beat them.